This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
We're back to 0-0 undefeated as the Claret's long unbeaten run is blunted by the Blades. This is the No Name Ever podcast. No Name Ever podcast. Good evening and welcome to the No Name Ever podcast. After a disappointing result and performance at Bramall Lane on Saturday, we're here to rip the plaster off. We're here to talk about the game and hopefully look forward to brighter times. And joining me to do so are George Poole and Adam Dennett. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening, Tom. Nice to speak to you. Nice to see you, Adam. I always like that we do a podcast, come rain or shine. So even after we've lost for the first time, it's nice to be back on and ready to talk into the mic.
Absolutely. How are you feeling about it, Adam?
Yeah, we're disappointed, weren't it? But like George said, it's good to let off some steam after these events just to make myself feel better, if not anything else. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be a bit of a therapy session for us. So let's start. I've been accused on Twitter of being a little bit negative about the result. So I thought, you know, sometimes when you've got up early, paid a bit of money and watched the game, sometimes you're a little bit more reactionary, you're a bit more angry. Some of the words that I was picked up on for using were embarrassing and pathetic. So I thought, what I'll do, I'll watch the highlights back before we record, and you know, maybe I was just getting a bit carried away, maybe I was just in a bit of a mood. Having watched the highlights, I'd like to stick by the words embarrassing and pathetic. I have to say, I really thought it was very far below what's an acceptable standard. George, let's start with you. Do you agree with me? Am I being a bit harsh there? Am I too negative? Let me know.
Well, it's quite funny you say that, because I was accused of the exact same thing on Saturday evening after I tweeted out, and I must have got something like 20 plus replies, and I just couldn't. You know, when you've just got so many that you feel rude replying to some, and not others. So I just completely left it, and I didn't back myself up. So this is myself backing myself up on the podcast. The words I used myself were pathetic and embarrassing as well, and to be honest, I stand by them as well. It was one of those games where I think there was definitely some tactical issues with company personally. I know we'll go into it a bit later on, but I think after 20 minutes it was obvious we were being bullied on the pitch, you know, physically. I'd have made changes then, and I thought it was a really competitive first half from both teams, from two really contrasting teams. You could tell from minute one that they were completely different styles of play, but it was really enjoyable to watch. And I thought we've probably got a bit lucky to shade it in the first half and go in at 2-1. But it was just the nature of that collapse in the second half. And I think for me, I'm going a bit overboard, maybe a tiny bit overboard, just because I was quite like attached to the idea of this team also going 23 unbeaten, like just like our last championship winning team did. So I was quite emotionally invested in that happening. So when it was, you know, 16 was it, just before the weekend, and the way we just turned over and let them run riot in the second half, it was just quite deflating, to be honest. And ahead of a big game next weekend, it just thought, well, we're on Sky here against who for me are the title rivals in Sheffield United, and the way we just rolled over in the second half, it did annoy me. And we'll go into the specifics later, but I just felt we're a bit weak at times and a bit, you know, slow really to react. And I guess, Tom and Adam, what we'll talk about later is it was the nature of the goals in that every threatening piece of play from Sheffield United was either a cross or a set piece. And it was clear as day that something was going wrong. And boy, was it frustrating watching at home.
Yeah, I find it hard to disagree with any of that. There was just so much that was obviously wrong that wasn't addressed. And to me, it's not all personnel. It's not all, there's a lack of physicality, which is obvious, but it's an attitude thing for me as well. Just mentally, we look weak. Like you say, they got that early goal at the start of the second half and we just followed after that. And that was after a pretty decent first half. And I think, like you say, we're probably slightly fortunate to be in front, but we'd certainly been in the game. We'd been trading blows. It looked like two really good teams having a go at each other. And the second half looked like, a non-league team going up and being steamrolled by a full-time outfit. But before we go on to the specifics, then looking at the individual goals and maybe some of the personnel questions as well. Adam, you weren't quite as doom and gloom as me and George. I think it's probably important to look at the result, not just on its own, but in the context of the season as well. George pointed out we're going away there to probably the best team in the division other than ourselves. So you'd have to say that's the hardest game of the season, probably. How are you feeling after it?
Yeah, it were really tough to watch. And before the game, I was really confident and like watched Sheffield United a few times recently, and they ground out results without being too impressive. Really good win at West Brom actually last week, but they really reminded me of like a Sean Dyche Championship team. Really good direct balls, in behind, high quality, high energy, high physicality, and I really not enjoyed their performance, but really appreciated their performance looking back on it. But yeah, from our point of view, they would say the same looking back at the game from what you and George said in the first half. I thought we did okay, showed some good intent going forwards. Yeah, we looked a bit shaky at the back, but we did get to the second balls. They did win a lot of the first balls from the corners and crosses, but we were really, really quick to get to the second balls and get them clear, other than obviously the goal in the first half. But yeah, at half time, I just didn't see that second half coming. Because at points this season, we've looked vulnerable defensively, and I think obviously we probably missed Jay Rodriguez just as much defensively as we did going forward from set pieces and crosses. But I think it's awful second half, which we'll go into all the goals and details. But bigger picture, I'd have taken this position at the start of the season, I'd have snapped your hand off for it. All the changeover of players, managers, style of play, for us to be able to do all that really quickly, and like balance in the bank as well, and be top of the table, 16, 17 games undefeated, and shown good character in the last couple of weeks. I'm really hopeful that we can bounce back. Company weren't panicking after the results. We were talking about markers in the season, and this has to be one for us. And what a game to go to next week. Not ideal. We'd have either won or got a good point at Sheffield United going into that game, but not all doom and gloom for me.
It certainly sharpens the focus, doesn't it? There's no time to dwell on it, really. And I think you're right about Company. It's very, very level-headed, win or lose. Speaks really well. And I'm hoping that, as we've seen him do with other sort of setbacks this season, he'll learn the lessons from it and we'll be better for the big derby on Sunday. So let's dig into the goals then. You touched on it really, Adam, already, what the major problem was in that second half. But if we look at the first half, first of all, Benson with a goal and an assist yet again. There's a lot of talk, does he have to be coming off the bench to have this impact? Is it better to have him coming on as a sub when the opposition have got tired legs? He started this game and he had the exact same impact he's been having off the bench, scoring, assisting. Probably the brightest spark in our first half. George, what did you think of his performance?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, this, because I was one of those who was saying he should stay on the bench after, ahead of the game on the podcast last week. I think it was definitely Dave who was saying he should be starting. And I said, no, Dave, let's keep Goodmanson starting, let's keep Benson on the bench. But tell you what, after, you know, 35 minutes, I was proven royally wrong, not for the first time on this podcast. And yeah, it was just, he's a joy to watch. I said it last week on the podcast, I'll say it again. I just feel like I'm watching the Burnley versions of Hazard in Zorori and Messi in Benson. You know, he's got that right left foot just coming off the right, does Benson. And he's not afraid, neither of them are afraid to take on the fullback. And that's the most exciting thing about it, really, because it just gets you off your seat. Whether it works or whether it doesn't, it gets you off your seat. And I think, and I'm probably echoing what I said last week, what distinguishes Benson and Zorori from Teller is that both Benson and Zorori regularly get past the fullback, whereas Teller is just not quite as polished with his dribbling. I thought he went really under the radar at the weekend, but admittedly playing out of position up front. So yeah, Benson though, back to Benson, fantastic. I mean, for the first goal, it's classic Benson, cutting in, trying to just whip it to that far corner. And unlike Goodmanson, who I must admit, I love Goodmanson, but every shot he takes, he's trying to pass it into the back of the net. It's like he's kicking it with a cushion. It goes nowhere. But Benson, he actually put some wit behind it. And that's why, in the end, poor Jack Robinson, who unfortunately came back to haunt us in the second half, he has nothing, he can't do anything but try and put his head on it. And it goes into the back of the net. But for the second, it showed the other side of Benson's game, which is, I think, from the interviews, I don't know if you guys have noticed it, when he's been pressed on why Benson's not playing, companies always said, well, yeah, we're delighted with his assists and his goals going forward. But, you know, there's two sides to playing in a championship. And I think he was referring to, you know, the structure, the defensive side of his game. But for the second goal, it was that in motion, you know, him pressing high up the pitch, just like companies really, you know, allowed them to do this season. And he nicks the ball and then it's just a classic composed finish. So yeah, delighted to watch Benson at the moment, and I'm really, really enjoying them both. And I think we'll have a struggle at the end of the season saying, do we prefer Benson or Zorori, because they're just both fantastic to watch at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely, another fantastic performance from Benson. I think Zorori's been a little bit quieter the last couple of games, but it's nice that, you know, like you say, if one of them is under firing slightly, that you can call on the other one in superb form at the minute. And I think I'd be really disappointed if he didn't start against Blackburn. Obviously, you know, it's a great weapon to bring on off the bench, but I think I'd rather have a best player playing from the start personally. So Adam, we'll touch on the first goal Sheffield United scored, and it'll lead us, I think, into the second half. As you said, we were slightly more convincing defending our penalty area in that first half. A lot of balls coming into the box. But like you said, we won the second balls. They didn't have too many efforts on goal. There was one that Harwood Bellis cleared off the line. And then, of course, the goal. And it's the big ball up to the back post. They win the first header and it's just touchdown. And that was a pattern that came back to haunt us in the second half. But yeah, I don't mean to give you the worst job of the podcast, but talk us through the defending in the second half of some of those goals.
Well, I think obviously the first half, the first goal, it's hard to sit and whinge when we've said how positive, not lack of VAR because it wouldn't have made a difference, but it wasn't a corner. It flicked off their striker and should have been a goal kick. But you kind of, again, I was saying you've got to look at the bigger picture. We had one goal for us last week against Rotherham in that regard for the throw-in. And you want it all to be right. Not two wrongs don't make a right, but you're going to get that in this league and you've just got to defend it better. And it was just like watching a repeat of pretty much, three, four of the goals, just not reacting in the box, not winning enough ball, I don't think we protected Muric enough. I know we'll come on to Muric, but we just let them get on top of him and we didn't. We needed someone in there to mess with it and protect him a bit better than we did. And obviously we didn't have the players on the pitch to do that effectively. But yeah, so disappointing just to see the same thing over and over and over again. And yeah, it's something that they really need to work on. I don't think other teams in this league will have the quality to put us under as much pressure as Sheffield United did for such a sustained period. But yeah, teams are going to target that. So we need to find a way to get around that. We've got a set piece coach. He'll be a busy man this week.
Yeah, very much so. So I think before we come on to Muric, let's look at the personnel. So, George, you've made the point there for the first goal. You've got Josh Cullen marking Ollie McBurney. Now, that's, he's not going to win the header. But then the problem is, I guess, when you look at that team that was out, you mentioned earlier, Advent Rodriguez wasn't playing, so you've lost a bit of height there. Really, and if you look at that, if you look at the whole team, there's only three players who were tall. One of them's Muric, we'll come back to him. Centre halves, Howard, Bellis and Bayer, they're not Ben Mee kind of defenders. They're there primarily because the ball players, I would say, rather than out and out defenders. Not saying they can't defend, not saying they don't like to tackle, but that's lacking, obviously, when those balls are coming in the box. And like you say, if you've only got two players who can win headers, then you're going to end up in situations where you've got Josh Cullen marking Ollie McBurney, or, you know, for the second goal, you've got nobody marking anybody. So obviously, tactically, they weren't set up properly because they're not just losing the first one, they're losing the second, third, fourth. They're not clearing the lines if they do manage to get a block in. But how much would you put it down to the personnel, George, as to why we look so shaky at the back? How much is the were we missing certain players in there? And who, if any, would you like to see come in for the next game just to improve that situation?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because, like you said, the first one, you've got Josh Cullen marking up Ollie McBurney. Now, Ollie McBurney, guy, he's an annoying player, isn't he? But he's absolutely superb at winning headers, winning the balls. Bristol City, when he was brought on last Tuesday night away at Bristol City, he won everything in the air. They just couldn't cope with him. He's just really good at it. He knows exactly how to do an Ashley Barnes back into a man, make his body strong and win it, and, you know, win a header. You know, he's got that extra height that probably Barnes doesn't. But speaking of Ashley Barnes, I just, for me, even though obviously we edged the first half, we were going in 2-1 up, after 20 minutes, it was obvious we were getting, no, scratch that. After 10 minutes, it was obvious we were getting bullied, you know, around the pitch. Teller was just looking a completely, just a lone figure up front in that he just couldn't get into the game because it just, Sheffield United are a really physical team. And I just thought, for me, we lacked the ability to really put a footprint on the game. And when Sheffield United, like Adam referred to, put us under pressure, even in the first half, we just couldn't really combat that way because when the ball went up, if we didn't, you know, pass it out well, there was no hold up player up there, or there's no one to really get stuck into the defence. And for me, I wanted either Barnes or Dervis Ogley on after 20 minutes because I thought, okay, fair enough, start with this game plan, but it's not working, and I'll stick with that even though we went in at 2-1. I just thought we really lacked that physical edge, and like you're saying, when Rodriguez isn't playing, I think it was Adam who mentioned it earlier, we miss his defensive side almost as much as his attacking side because he's got that height in the box and he's really not afraid to get himself stuck in the box. So for me, after 20 minutes, I'd have changed things. I'd have brought Barnes or Dervis Ogley on just because when you're defending a set piece, you've got a striker in there who's moderately tall, but will put an elbow in, will make things difficult. Even if Barnes is losing a header to McBurney, he's making things difficult for him. It's not just going to be able to be put back on a plate back in the 6-yard box. Now, for the second goal, Bayer and Howard Bellis are just static as a 6-foot truck. But for the third goal, this is where, for me, we move on to a discussion of Muric. And Muric for the third goal, and for me, Mattsson for the fifth goal. I think the fourth goal was pure luck. It's one of them. I know there were so many goals to speak about, but it's the one where it's fall to the edge of the box, someone's shot, bit of bobbling and it goes in. It's unlucky, but for me, I think there's a discussion to be had here, and I'm gonna leave it to Adam to start it for Muric for the third goal, and we'll move on to Mattsson for the fifth goal and where we go going forward with that left back position.
Yeah, and I think just before we come on to the Muric elephant in the room, I think it's a really good point you made about not necessarily Barnes. You know, we disagree on whether or not Barnes should be in the team, but it's that thing of, even if you're not going to win the header, at least be putting in a challenge. And to me, that just wasn't there in the second half at all. You know, it's like you say, you can challenge McBurney and he might win the header, but if you're going up with him, you're making him think about winning the challenge and not where to put his header. The second goal was a perfect example of it. The first header is a free header. McBurney's got a free header to tap it in at the 6-yard box. If you've got someone there, you know, and, you know, Josh Cullen can't necessarily beat him in the air, but if he does enough there just to cut him off, it's not such a simple finish. And that kind of thing is why I say embarrassing, pathetic. You know, that's just based, that's not working hard enough for me, and there's no excuse for that. So that's a good point. let's move on. Let's get on to Muric. I was in the away end on Saturday, and in the first half, he was getting a lot of stick from our own fans. Now, we've mentioned already that there's only sort of three players in that team that have got a lot of physicality, a lot of height, and obviously at 6 foot, I think he's 6 foot five, 6 foot six. He's the biggest guy in the team by a mile. Now, he's absolutely nailed to his line, and when you're that high, there's no excuse for it, in my opinion. And I don't understand, is it confidence? Is he told not to come off his line? There's a few people on Twitter saying, you know, he's not to blame for the goals. And, you know, I don't expect him to come and get them off the penalty spot. And obviously the first two goals are coming from that. The corners are coming in deeper. They're winning the first header and the second. And I don't blame him for those. But in general, all season we've said his command of his box is nowhere near good enough, especially for the height he is. And I don't think that helps the defence. You know, we've been spoiled in the last few years. We've had Nick Pope coming in getting everything. And of course, Muric isn't as good as Nick Pope, and he's not going to be. But why can't he come and get some of these balls? Why can't he just come and grab a ball out of the air and just take the pressure off? Do you know what I mean? Even if you just grab it and sit on it for 2 minutes, you know, or it was just constant balls in the box in that second half, and there's no relief coming from the keeper. For me, so while I wouldn't say he's directly at fault for any of the goals, he's not helping that situation at the back where we're so weak on set pieces. Well, that's my 2 pence anyway, Adam. Be interesting to see what you think about it.
Yeah, I agree in the main, to be honest. As I don't think he was stuck on his line on a lot of them. I think that's half the problem. You've got our last two keepers, like you say, we've been spoiled. Pope, who could come to command the area and would pluck two or three out of the area game. And you'd be confident we're going to defend it well anyway. But Heaton invariably did stay on his line. Obviously, had a lot more physical defence in front of him to deal with the threat. But you'd expect with the with his physical attributes that Muric would be more commanding. I've only ever seen him in a Burnley show. I'm not going to lie and say I know loads about him, but he's just not. He doesn't seem to have that in his locker, and he just doesn't fill you with confidence with that side of the game. And that it's the half attempts and little flounders at the ball, and like you say, 6 foot five, and he doesn't seem to have a reach. Like he's like reaching up and still level with the defense, with the attackers. It's infuriating to watch. I don't know what the answer is, but I can't see it just improving overnight. So something's got to change, but I don't think. Overall, it does bring some positives to the way we play. That is a clear area of weakness. I hope he can get better at it, but I think it's going to be a worry going forward, to be fair.
Do you know what it makes me think of? Do you know, like sometimes you see a film where there's like a big bloke who's got no confidence, and they'll do something like they'll do a fake robbery, and like he'll take down the robber, trip and fall over, and he'll take down the robber, and everyone, oh, he's a hero, and it gets his confidence through the roof. That's what they need to do. Company needs to stage a fake robbery at the training ground in midweek, somehow orchestrate it so that Muric stops the robbery, just get his confidence up a bit, just come and clear people out, man.
Even he made a couple of really good saves in the second half, but he went out for corners again, and I'm just thinking, well, we're just knackered again anyway. And I think goals came from one or both of them when he'd made a good save, and yeah. Really difficult one.
There was one ball in the second half where it's coming straight down his throat, and he tips it, palms it away rather than catching it. And you think, just common sense would be, we can't handle these area balls. So like I said, any chance you get to grab it, you need to grab it and just take the sting out of it for a minute. Well, there's none of that either. And I think I'm right in saying he caught one ball in the whole game, which is about 80 minutes with no one near him. And there was, you know, the ironic cheers in the away end. And, you know, of course it's not good, but I couldn't really blame anybody, to be honest. It was very frustrating watching him. So, yeah, that's Muric. And then
Tom, what were the atmosphere like in the away and second half? It was hard to tell on the telly, but obviously the atmospheric game has been absolutely brilliant this season, home and away. How did the fans react at the ground when it were clearly going against us in that second half?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, it was a lot better than you'd imagine. I think a lot of people were of the mindset of, like, well, this is rubbish. And, like, of course it was rubbish. There's frustration because you can see it going wrong and the manager's doing nothing to change it until it's too late. Muric did get a lot of stick. But other than that, I thought, you know, there wasn't booing, there wasn't really swearing or anything. At full time, people were still singing we are top of the league, clapped them off, and that it was very tolerant considering what that second half was like. So that, you know, that's a good sign. But I was coming away from that game thinking, if that happens again next week, then the atmosphere is going to change very quickly. Well, let's not think about that. So I think just one last personnel sort of discussion to be had before we come on to the Crawley game is fullback. So I think centre half, for whatever reason, we're not going to see McNally. He obviously doesn't fancy him for whatever reason. I think Egan Riley's still a little bit raw, so I don't expect him to change. Harwood, certainly not Harwood Bellis, and probably not Bayer either. But there's been a lot of discussion about having Taylor sat on the bench. You know, it's a guy who's played the last five seasons in the Premier League. Obviously, Roberts and Vitinha, they've been interchanged quite a bit this season. Is there an argument, George, to say that when we're playing these better teams away from home, so the sort of teams that are going to cause us problems, Matson and Vitinha maybe are a little bit too offensively minded? Is that fair? Do you think they were the root cause of some of the goals, or is that just, are we just kind of retroactively applying that criticism and just thinking, who've we got on the bench who's good, you know, get them in the next game kind of thing?
Well, for me, I think my ire is saved mostly for Ian Matson. I think when we were just discussing the Muric thing then, at least with Muric, the thing, I don't think it's not a lack of willing with Muric. It's not that he doesn't fancy it. It's just that he's not confident at coming for the balls. You know, like you say, he's 6'5", but he's got the reach of Ricky Hatton by the looks of it. He just doesn't know how to command a box. That's the pure and simple. With a third goal, it was in the 6-yard box. The cross was planted in the 6-yard box, and he doesn't come for it. He doesn't even move from his line, and it creates a culture in the second half where everyone's crowding that 6-yard box because they're like, "Hey, we send this lad. Let's get it in there, get it in the mixer, and McBurney will get his head on it." And unfortunately, it led to our downfall. But with Matson, it's so many times this season where, look, we've been doing well, but whether it's tackles, whether it's 50-50s, a header here and there, tracking back, it just leaves a lot to be desired in terms of what you can see in terms of running his backside off. For the fifth goal, which is the one we're obviously going to talk about here, the fifth goal, it goes over the top to George Baldock. I think he's probably the wing-back, isn't he, when they play that silly little three at the back, pretending to be Chris Wilder's Sheffield United still. But he's running behind, and not only Matson has just completely ignored him, he doesn't know where he is. But when he does see where he is, instead of going, "Oh, gosh, I've messed up there, I'll track back," he stands there and watches whilst, fair play to the guy, Muric makes a cracking save with his left foot, you know. And like you say, Adam, he redeemed himself in some way. He made them three saves in quick succession after maybe the third or fourth goal. But the fifth goal, Muric has made a cracking save. Unfortunately, it's come straight back out to McBurney, who's then slotted it home. But if Ian Matson had just decided, right, I'll run back and actually try and help the defence, maybe, like we were saying earlier, maybe McBurney still wins the ball, but it's a harder finish to make. He's got pressure on him. But it was just a complete lack of intensity for me from Matson. And I've felt it, you know, for quite a large part of the season. I know Rich has as well, where he just doesn't seem interested sometimes in the defensive side of his game. So for me, yeah, I'm not a huge admirer of Matson, to be honest. He was brilliant when he first came, but I think his game's been rattled a bit after that sending off a couple of months ago now, and he's not been the same player since. Goodness knows how he got nominated for the fans' player of the month for October ahead of some of the other players who were playing well, like Benson. So for me, Matson, I wouldn't be playing him. I'd start Charlie Taylor, especially in the games, you know, against good teams, like we're saying, Sheffield United. So for me, Taylor's a Premier League left-back. He improved a lot the defensive side of his game from when he first joined us from Leeds. And for me, he's just a more polished player. Now, whether Matson's got a clause in his contract that says he must play X amount of games, it's an interesting one to throw up in the air. But before I hand over to Adam and get your views, Adam, for me, Vitinha, I still like him, and I like how they're interchanging with Roberts. I don't have any qualms with what's going on there. So whichever fullback starts on the right, I'm pretty confident he'll do a decent job. But Adam, what are you thinking about the Matson or Taylor situation?
Well, I'm not really with you on that one, George, to be honest. I think he's added a lot more to the team than what he gives away to be for me. He's got a goal and four assists this season. We wouldn't have won the penalty against Norwich if it weren't for his lung busting run with 10 minutes left, got us through the thirds, and then it resulted in a penalty. I think it's more the system that he is going to be high up. We see Cullen or Brownhill or whoever's playing in that defensive role drop back in and wide whenever we are attacking. I can't really defend some of his performances, the Blackpool sending off. We just wouldn't have seen in the last 10 years under Dyche. You don't react with stuff like that. West Brom, were very poor. And like you said, at the weekend for the fifth goal, which I'm going to complain again, was offside. But anyway, he switches off for a split second, which you can do, and especially when they were probably mentally and physically knackered by that point. But not getting back in is unforgivable, really. And he does just like wander back in like Trent Alexander-Arnold like this season. But I think when Mattson has been poor this season, Kompany has switched it up. He's not played in the games afterwards. Like when he got sent off and came back from suspension, he was on the bench with Tino, carried on playing. But for me, I think, especially against not the weaker side, but anyone outside the top three or four, I think he is a must-have in this system. Taylor, yeah, in that game on Saturday, I think he'd have done a much better job. But overall, I really like Mattson. I think he'll be a big player for us this season. And when you talk about the other side, I think Vitinho's been a bit off it last few games as well. And I think I'd have probably rather Roberts start. I think he had really, really poor games against Reading and Norwich. Vitinho, really sloppy play at times and signs of tiredness to the first full championship season. But these young players, they're going to be inconsistent. We've got good quality in the squad that when they are a bit off it, we should have players to be able to come in. But yeah, Mattson starts the majority of games for me and should continue to do so.
Yeah, I agree with you on Mattson. I think he's going to be up perfectly. He's given us more than he's detracting. I think maybe the answer, forgot to touch on as well, the fact that obviously he hit the bar in the first half, and if that goes in 3-1 at half time, maybe we're having a different discussion. I think maybe with Mattson, probably what the answer would have been is, especially when Sheffield United get that goal so soon after half time, the company should be recognising that and saying, look, maybe at this point we need to just dig in and protect what we've got a little bit. And at that point, then you say, well, let's sacrifice Mattson's attacking ability and just get Taylor on. He's a bit more sturdy. But yes, I think you're right. I don't think Taylor fits in the system anywhere near as well as Mattson or Bayer does. And I think that's basically why he isn't playing. It's not anything to do with his qualities as a player. I think it's just that he doesn't fit. One last little curveball I'd maybe like to throw in there before we have a quick look at the Crawley game is right back. We've been talking about Patino or Roberts. We have, of course, got a third right back on the books who seems to have been completely frozen out. Now, to me, Vitinho and Roberts, neither of them are absolutely nailing down a spot at the minute. There's much of a muchness between them. I think Matt Lowton's a player who's been with us for a long time. He's played a lot of games in the Premier League. I don't think he's particularly let us down when he's played. He's got attributes going forward. I think Conor Roberts said last year that he was a better footballer than he was. I wonder if something's happened behind the scenes or if it's just that his face doesn't fit. I don't know. It's a bit of a shame, but I would like to see him perhaps get a run out for the Crawley game on Tuesday night. And that leads us nicely on to the Crawley game on Tuesday night.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Now, normally we'd have a big all singing, all dancing preview show for you. There's not a lot to include this week. We can't look at past matches because we've never played Crawley before. It wouldn't take very long to go through the players who have played for both. If I'm not an official quiz question setter, but maybe have a think at home. I'll let you know there's two players who've played for both Burnley and Crawley. You can mull that one over. You can email us. And maybe we'll be able to find some sort of unofficial quiz prize for you if you can name either or both of those two players. Before we have a look at what we'd like to do with the lineup, though, we have got an opposition fan view for you. Someone well known to known as Charlotte Rigby. It's her other half, who happens to be a Crawley Town fan. I didn't know there were any Crawley Town fans, but Charlotte's managed to find one. And she's wrote to partner into giving us a bit of a preview of what we can expect from Crawley ahead of the game.
Hello, No Nay Never listeners. My name is Ryan, and I am Charlotte's long-term partner who just happens to support Crawley Town, living in Burnley. Even in the second round, we had Fulham at home. I remember saying to the people I work with, who obviously all support Burnley, how mental it would be if we were to beat Fulham and then get Burnley away. I remember watching the draw. Burnley were drawn first, obviously, the home team. And I remember just going 9-9-9, being that was Crawley's ball. And when it was drawn, I couldn't actually believe it. Very happy. And it was the best, it was a perfect draw for me, but not for, you know, 99% of other Crawley fans. Although I did read earlier that we are bringing the largest away support of the season so far, which isn't something I expected. Them coming up from London, well, just outside London, on a cold November Tuesday night, all the way up here. But that's going to be great for me, being able to be in with them a lot. There's going to be a few of us. And, you know, it's hopefully we can do some damage. I mean, probably not. It depends what team you lot are putting out. But we can live in hope. There's one player who I'm looking forward to starting, Dom Telford. He was actually born in Burnley. So he went up through Blackpool's youth team. He'd never played for Burnley. So hopefully he gets the start because, well, wouldn't that just be poetic? Being born in Burnley, went to school in Burnley and happened to score against Burnley in the cup. It's a shame, like, we had a really good player from Liverpool, James Balzaghi, but he got injured a couple of months back and we had to send him back and he was lighting up the league. And at that point, I thought, you know, if we play him, there's a good chance. But he's gone, no longer with us. Speaking of lighting up the league, we still are in a relegation battle. We were predicted to finish top half, challenge maybe for playoffs. It's not gone well, but under the new manager, out of six games, we're undefeated in five, losing at Accrington at the weekend. Well, I say at Accrington, we had them at home in the FA Cup first round, and they beat us 4-1. So not great, really. Not good preparation coming into this game. But with Blackburn on the horizon for you lot, I very much doubt you're putting out a strong team. So it should enable us to go against, you know, your second string. And who knows? There could be a little upset. I'd love it if it was potentially, you know, a nice free-all game. Pennies in front of us lot. And we win on penalties. Go through. Take on Liverpool next round in the quarters at Liverpool. A man can dream. I'm very much looking forward to the game tomorrow. It should be fantastic. I hope you lot enjoy it for the people coming. Because I don't know how many people will go to the Burnley game for you lot. I'd guess probably around 10,000 because it's £10 a ticket, so it's quite cheap. Can't wait. And I will have a scrap with Lottie after the game as well, just for a bit of a laugh, depending on the result. Goodbye.
Thank you very much for that, Ryan. It's good to get a Crawley Town insight, and hopefully, whatever the outcome of the game, there won't be too many domestics in the Rigby household after the game. So let's just round off then, just by having a quick look at what we like to do with the team. It's a bit of a tricky one, I think, because there's a lot to be balanced. We've obviously just come back off a really disappointing performance, so it'd be nice to get a comfortable win, a little bit of confidence back around the place going into the big game on Sunday. We've skirted around that game, by the way. We will be doing another show before Sunday, so we'll have a big pre for you there, along with a quick look back at the Crawley game. So there's that, but then there's also injuries, you know, fitness, suspension, things like that. You don't want any key players to get injured against Crawley and end up missing the big game. So with all that in mind, what do you do, George? How many players do you drop in? Who are you leaving in, if anyone? Who needs some minutes? Is there anyone that you think give them a game with a view to maybe staking a claim for a place on Sunday?
For me, this game, I'm afraid to say, is a complete afterthought. Not to go Sean Dyche on you, but I'm not bothered by, you know, if we scrape through, if we beat them 5-0, if we, you know, if we lose, dare I say it. I'm really not that bothered. For me, the game is Sunday. We've not lost against that lot in 12 years. Let's extend that, please. So my nerves are already focused entirely on Sunday. But as for the team, all that's a roundabout way of saying, let's make as many changes as we can. You know, let's give games to Bailey Peacock Farrell for sure. You know, he came in for a couple of championship games and impressed a lot of people. And then I'd also be bringing in Charlie Taylor because he needs minutes under his belt. He's wasting his time otherwise. I'd be tempted to say the same with Lawton, Tom, but I think he's been frozen out. Like, it looks like he's on his way out the door, which for me is a big shame. But in terms of the other defenders, CJ Egan-Riley's come on a week and a half ago, was it, to play as sort of a CDM, a bit like Tarkowski used to do in 2016 when he first joined. But I'd like to see him, you know, have a go in defence in his natural role. And I'd really like to see McNally, because he's a guy he's very tall. I have a mate who's an Oxford United fan, and he couldn't sing highly enough of Luke McNally. So I'd really like to see what he's got about him. You know, it might be the case that he's not ready for championship football yet, but he should be ready to be facing Crawley. But for the midfield, some of them probably do need minutes. You know, the likes of Bastian. Brownhill is obviously missed at the weekend, so it might be good to get 45 to 60 minutes back under his belt again, get him up to speed, because you don't want to be going into that derby a little underprepared after having a week off. You know, you want to be raring to go. And then up front, Jay Rodriguez, do not touch this game, fella. Keep him in cotton wool. Make sure he's ready for Sunday, because he's so important both going forward and defensively, as we exposed in that second half against Sheffield United. So, yeah, let's start Dervis Oglu, see if we can get another goal under his belt, because I'm sure he'll have taken quite a lot of confidence from getting the last-minute winner last week. So, yeah, wholesale changes for me all around. And let's see what some of the other players have got about them. I'm particularly interested to see McNally, hopefully, and Dervis Oglu, because Dervis Oglu is a guy who's impressed me a bit coming off the bench recently. So, yeah. Looking forward to seeing what changes are made, but let's keep our eyes on Sunday, eh?
Fair enough. What about yourself, Adam? Are you similar mind?
Yeah, completely. We are there, George. I think all eyes have got to be on Sunday. We've got to trust that the squad, the bigger squad that we built, will be good enough to beat Crawley Town, no matter who plays. And yeah, we're just going to mention that, George. Just put it on the chat. Dyra Costello has been in and around the squad this season. Where I sit in the Bob Lord, you see all the players that have missed out on the squad sat quite close, and he's been there along with Owen Dodgson. So I'd expect him to be maybe in the side. And dare I say his name, Scott Twine, any chance? Who knows? You never know, he might just throw him in there. Big, nice midweek present for us before the game, but... No, I'm with you, George. I think I'd agree with pretty much the starting lineup you've just said there. Maybe Ashley Barnes or Dervis Oglu or both. But yeah, other than that, give the guys who've been playing week in week out a rest, because it's been even more crazy than a standard championship season with the World Cup coming up. So there's no need. Well, we don't need to take any chances with our big players.
Yeah, I think you'd like, especially Cork, Rodriguez, you'd like to rest their leg there. They're on side of 30. Teller at the minute looks knackered. I think it was a mistake to play him at centre forward on Saturday because I just don't think he got into the game at all. But also, you know, he runs himself into the ground and he has to like be dragged off on the hour every week because he looks shattered. So it'd be good to rest him. I think I'm of the same mind, you know. Give a run out for the likes of Barnes, Davishoglu, Bastien, people who aren't getting that many minutes. Make sure the two Belgian wingers aren't getting anywhere near it as well. I think we'd really struggle if Sorori or Benson were to miss on Sunday. It's a shame we haven't got Chilin off to rotate, or Twine, like you say, it'd be an ideal game for one of them, or Westwood. But as far as I know, I don't think any of them are quite there yet. But and then maybe even Costello, you mentioned, like you say, Dodgson, maybe it's worth playing Taylor at centre-half and Dodgson at left-back, give him a run out. And I thought Tucker as well, Nijai Tucker, he played a few in pre-season for the first team. Saw him score at Shrewsbury in the friendly. So I had a feeling he might be sort of in and around the first team a little bit more than he has been. But maybe if you need some wingers to play, obviously he might play Johan on one side, but it'd be maybe nice to see Tucker get a run out as well. And I think, same as you, I think we could probably afford to play a second string and still have a decent chance of going through in this game. And even if we don't, it's not the end of the world. Like you say, with the fixture pile up as it is, it wouldn't be the worst thing to miss out on a couple more midweek games. Although, having said that, I would love to see, if we get through and we get a Premier League team, I'd love to see how we'd play against a Premier League team. I'd be really intrigued to see how that would go. I have a feeling that we might do all right, and it'd be quite interesting to put a little run together in the cups because it's been a long time since we have. But you're right, we know where the priority lies. So I think that about covers it, really. Crawley on Tuesday, before the big one on Sunday. We're not going to mention the names. I'll be there tomorrow. I don't know if anyone else is mad enough to do that, but a little bit of history, our first ever game against Crawley Town. Hopefully a nice evening. Hopefully progression in the cup. And or no injuries, and I'll probably take getting knocked out and no injuries now. Thank you very much for joining us. Thanks, George, for your insight. Thank you, Adam, for a little bit of positivity and level-headedness, because me and George could not provide that at all today. And thank you very much to everyone at home for listening. I've been Tom Whittaker, and this has been the Known and Ever podcast.
The Known and Ever podcast is brought to you in association with the TalkSport Fan Network. Natalie Bromley is the host and editor, and the show is produced by Matt Moss. Our resident statistician is Dave Roberts, and our FPL expert is Adam Dennett. The analysis show team is collectively Tom Whittaker, Richard Steele, George Poole, Charlotte Rigby, Adam Dennett, and Robbie Kopak. Our music is provided by George Gaskill, and our newsletter team is headed up by Jamie Smith. If you don't already, you can subscribe to our newsletter by visiting nonadnever.substack.com. Our thanks as ever go to our partners TalkSport. We are, as ever, proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.